Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Flint, Michigan, and was ordained a Jesuit priest in 1972. For 19 years, he served in spiritual direction and education at Manresa Jesuit Retreat House. In 2013, after watching the movie Of Gods and Men, he decided at age 74 to go to Nairobi, Kenya, and begin a new assignment, serving God and his people. His name, Father Bernie Owens, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Father Bernie Owens, who was ordained a Jesuit priest in 1972. For 19 years, Father, you served at Manresa, the retreatants of Manresa, at the corner of Courton and Woodward in Bloomfield Hills. Tell us about Manresa Jesuit Retreat House.
Well, for many people, it's home away from home. If you look on the grounds of that 40-acre plot, a beautiful setting with a branch of the Rouge River running through it, you'll see little metallic signs next to a tree or to a bush commemorating somebody who would come there annually for a number of years to bring their burdens, to bring their life, to bring whatever it is, and to be quiet with God, to be quiet with the Bible. The main thing is to be quiet and to allow all the dust that is kind of in our psyche and in our brains to settle and to get in touch with the essentials of one's life and what's the meaning of your life. And people of various denominations and no denomination have come there. They feel welcome. A number of people disillusioned with institutional religion have come there. Nobody is forced to go to any of the talks. The one thing that you're not even forced to come to the meals. I don't know of anybody who's passed them up. But what we ask is that there be an atmosphere of quiet so that you can cut through the noise of your daily life and to listen to your heart, to listen to your soul as it wells up, as the truth of your needs, of your burdens, of your joys, of your hopes come to your consciousness, and you have quality time to be alone with the one that you call the holy, the sacred, the higher power, whatever your name is for the Almighty. You're given the freedom to be with that one however you wish.
If you want to learn more about Manresa, www.manresa-sj.org. Manresa-sj.org. Father, in your 19-year chapter at Manresa, what did the retreatants that you served teach you?
That there is a universal hunger for God, and that when people, oftentimes at the middle of their life, somewhere between 35 and 55, get in touch with that. And a lot of times it's the awareness of health changes, or something happened with one of their kids, or the marriage needs a boost, that people begin to get a sense of their mortality, their dependence, their fragility, that they're not in control of their life as much as they thought. And youth oftentimes sets you up for thinking that you're invincible and that you're going to live forever. And so it's that the need and is infinite. The hunger and thirst of people, it cuts across both genders, all nationalities, all denominations of Christianity, all religions, Muslim, Islam, whatever. And people who say have had a bad experience of organized religion, but say maybe it is through the AA. And we have AA meetings, Sunday evening and Thursday meeting for men at Manresa. And you see that need come forth. And so I see it constantly, and I just had a sense I could live for many generations and always have purpose, find meaning, and be available. And even though the need is universal, the way it comes out, the story of this man or that woman makes it unique. And so you never get bored in being with people like this as they bring their personal experience to share it in a confidential setting and to get some feedback and some guidance as to how to deal with it creatively.
The weekend starts on Friday evening and it goes till about 1 o'clock on Sunday. Another offering that you were famous for were the 30-day experience of the meditations and contemplations on the life and death of Jesus. What did that entail?
Well, as it says, a 30-day commitment, which most people can't give, but what they can is over 9 months, give 45 to 60 minutes a day on those same contemplations and meditations, so that the net effect is the same, whether it's 30 days exclusive, away from your job, away from your family, in kind of a cloistered setting, or you still got your job going for you, you still carry out your responsibilities, but you find 45 minutes every day to be alone with God, maybe with some scripture texts to pray on, and then once a week you see your guide to debrief. And you get the guidance based upon what has come up in that last 7 days as you prayed on these scripture passages. And it's really life-changing. For some people, it has changed their entire value system. And they begin to cut through a lot of the shoulds and the oughts and the way in which people are sold, you know, a vision of life. And they begin to see that really doesn't lead to what I most deeply want. For some people, then, it's an honesty check, but it's also an encounter with Jesus as the most significant person of their life, and he invites them to friendship and to share in a common work that God, whom he called Abba, has invited him to and everyone to. And so it's all invitational. There's nothing by way of force. God doesn't treat people that way, and if people understand God dealing with you that way, they haven't met the real God. But in that context, there is this invitation of teacher to disciple and growing in this shared work and shared friendship. And it enables one to face fear, face mortality, face death, and to meet a love strong enough to say, I can look death in the face, and it may scare me at some level, but deeper than that fear is this assurance, this relationship is stronger than death, and it carries me into the next life, to a life much fuller than this life.
Your mom, you said in an earlier segment that your mom passed at 95
yes.
in March of 2011. 4 weeks later, you go to see a movie on April 16th, 2011. The movie was entitled Of Gods and Men.
Correct.
It changed your life.
This phase of my life, it led me to East Africa, which I never anticipated doing. I just thought when the inspiration came, I said, with all due respect, God, you have to be out of your cotton-picking mind. I'm 74 years old. Well, I was 72 at that time, and it was going to take me some time to act on it if I were going to act on it. But it was like, are you really serious? Well, as I thought more and more about it, I said, I don't have to take care of my mom anymore. She's with God. I have three siblings, and they don't need me to stay in the States. The irony is that we've become closer through email and Skyping since I've moved to Nairobi. But with that, I just felt this growing joy, this sense of this is like a new lease on life. And then I have become close in spirit to Abraham. The best part of his life started after he was 75 years old. He had to leave his culture, goes to this new land. He doesn't know where he's going, but God says to him, Abraham, I call you to come to a new land, and I will give you a new life. And he picks up everything, and he goes.
Father, what was the movie Of Gods and Men about?
It was about 9 French monks, Catholic monks, who had established a monastery in a very obscure Muslim village in northern Algeria. And in 1992 or 3, a group of jihadists challenged the government. They wanted a Sharia law-based Islamic republic in Algeria. And what their first step to that was to tell all foreigners they had 4 weeks to get out of the country, otherwise they will be killed. Well, here are these monks who had been there for a number of years, not to convert people, but simply to be a witness to these simple Muslim people, and they had gotten pretty close to them and trusted and even offered some medical help to them. And to make a long story short, and most of the movie is about their decision-making process. Do we stay or do we leave? And you really get a sense of how some of them were afraid of dying. They would say to the head of the community, called the prior, "I didn't come here to die. You know, I think we ought to pick up and go somewhere else where we can do some good." And others were quieter about it. But in the end, they all came to a sense of unity about the fact that to be who we say we are and to be faithful to our call, we're going to stay. And 7 of the 9 were kidnapped in 1996, and 3 months later they were all dead. The other two lived on. One of them has died since, and one is still surviving. But what so struck me, Jack, in that movie was that there was a depth of integrity, a depth of commitment, and a love for people that were not of their religion, not of their culture, but there was a sense of connecting with God that happened to them. And I said, I want that. I want that kind of life and connection with God. Because I saw, like the title of your program, if you have God, nothing is impossible. Everything is possible. God takes what's mortal and makes it immortal. God takes the powerless and makes them powerful. God makes them stronger than death. They can face death and say, I may have fears, but there's something stronger underneath it all. And that's what I cling to. I know him. I know the one in whom I have believed. I love him because he loved me first, to the point of laying down his life. If to lay down my life for him is the situation, then so be it.
We're talking to Father Bernie Owens, who took God's calling and went to Nairobi, Kenya 2 years ago. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Father Bernie Owens, who in 2013, after watching the movie Of Gods and Men, decided at age 72 to go to Nairobi, Kenya, and begin a new assignment serving God and his people. Father, Nairobi, Kenya is the financial capital of East Africa. Tell us about Nairobi, Kenya.
Jack, it is just a stunning city. It's 3 million plus in numbers. You come out of the airport and you see modern 5 and 6 story buildings of corporate international companies, corporate headquarters there. And that was the first thing that hit me, even though I landed at midnight. And I said, there's money here. There is activity here in the financial sector. But I found out that there's an awful lot of poverty as well. Nairobi has all the appearances of a first-world city. You have buildings that go maybe 40 stories high. That's as high as they've gone yet. But a very busy downtown, lots of traffic, lots of malls, lots of very impressive buildings, people everywhere. And as they say, 3 million in the city, 45 million in the entire country. But Nairobi is... it's 5,500 feet above sea level. You got a fair number of poor. And then you have this incredible phenomenon of over at least 500,000 people living in this slum called Kibera. and people living in shacks with open sewers. And I've been through that area. I always go with somebody who lives there. Being of the skin color I am, white, you have to be, they know you're a foreigner and you look like an American and you're going to get hit up for a lot of money by this person and that person when you go through there. But I was very respected being with these other people. And I got to go into one of the huts to see how some people live, like about a 25 foot by 25 foot square hut with a corrugated metal roof, a bed in one corner, a bed in the other, a TV set. Yes, a TV set. And then you step outside and here is a three-year-old sitting next to an open sewer. Jobless people. Intelligent. They can speak English, but of course their first language is Swahili. And it's beyond words after a while. You just, you catch the common humanity, but I sense, my God, all the gifts that I've had, and I got a roof over my head, and I got three meals a day, and I have very meaningful work. And these people, many of them left the rural areas because they couldn't make it in agriculture. A lot of climate changes have led to the failure of farms. And so they come to the big city hoping to find work. And the great majority of them don't. And they're willing to work for anything. But many of them can't even get, you know, the most menial of jobs.
We're talking to Father Bernie. Father, talk to us about how the HIV virus has ravaged Africa these past 30 years.
Well, it is true. It has ravaged much of Africa such that you have some towns and villages where no one is alive between the ages of 20 and 60. Grandparents are raising children because the parents died. In a sense, many people get the virus, as you would imagine, by being irresponsible in their sexual behavior. But there are a number of other people through blood transfusions or through a partner or a spouse who's been sexually active with somebody who's infected, has been, you know, clean, but they get it from their spouse or their partner, and then they themselves get sick. And so the death rate is high. That's why, with the birth rate being high in Kenya, the death rate is also high because of HIV virus and all the violence that that country has been suffering from.
These last 2 years in Kenya,
right?
What have the people of Kenya taught you, Bernie Owens?
To walk with deeper gratitude for my life. To walk with less judgment about where other people stand with respect to God. I don't know their soul, and I haven't been dealt the cards that they were dealt with by life. I have met and heard some details of the stories of some really poor people, and this was new for me. I've lived largely in a white middle class or upper class socioeconomic environment. There were some of the times I met people of really struggling circumstances, but not like what I have experienced there. And so they've also taught me that family is what counts more than ever. How they cling together, that family is the most basic unit for our survival, our security, our affection needs, and that that's where most people, that's their base from which they move out and try to make a life. I guess, you know, I live among, I'm of a racial minority. I live among black people all the time. And it's like, I had some of that here in Detroit. I taught at U of D Mercy, where I would say I was a member of a, you know, I had a lot of black students when there. But here it's even more so. And people for whom life is even tougher than the vast majority of Americans. And so I would say I walk with more humility, with more a reservation about passing judgment on other people and just saying, we're all in this together. We're all sons and daughters of the one God. And we're all going to God together, or we're not going to go.
Years ago, I had a fellow Jesuit, Father John Foley, the founder of Cristo Rey Network, who for 30 years served the poor in South America.
Yes.
And he made the statement that despair is a third world country phenomenon, that there is no despair in the first world countries because you die. First world countries is loaded with hope. Do you find that?
Oh, yes. I find it in a determination to pick yourself up off the floor, even when you've been knocked down by an economic or social or experience of some kind of a shock. You've been knocked to the floor. And people, those survival instincts are so strong, but also loyalty to your children, to the life you've generated. Many of these people are willing to go to hell and back for their kids. And they grieve terribly when one of them has been killed. This latest massacre that we suffered at Garissa College, it's about 200 miles east of Nairobi. Most of those kids were the one child in, say, like a family of 68 children that were designated by the parents to get education as far as possible in hopes that that kid would get a job and would be able to provide for the rest of the members of the family, because oftentimes the rest of the family can't get jobs. And so the way in which the parents plan to hold the family together and provide for the family is through one of their children. When a child at that age is killed, it's absolute devastation. It's a condemnation to perpetual poverty.
We're talking to Father Bernie Owens, and I'm Jack Kosula, and this is Anything's Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Kosula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Father Bernie Owens, who now serves the people of Kenya. Father, what is your ministry in Kenya?
Jack, my ministry is to provide spiritual guidance at a retreat house, a 50-acre plot on the western end of Nairobi. We have thousands of people come there over a 12-month period to spend 8 days in quiet to renew their spirit and to go back to lead the tough, very challenging and challenged institutions of schools, hospitals, orphanages, homes for street kids, refugee camps. These are the kind of people who come, and they come first to get their sleep, then get the good nutrition. And we have a private room and a hot shower for each of them. Very good food. I mean, it's not high-end, but it's very substantial. And then they have 8 days to be quiet with God in Bible passages and come once a day to talk with somebody like me, or there are Kenyans on the staff, to debrief about what their experience is of God speaking to them about His deep personal love, they're being called by God, their own sense of needing to maybe repent or to say, I'm sorry to God for not loving or letting selfishness or fear get in the way, and then God's mercy, which is even greater, and then renewing that sense of call to go back and be with those kids or to be with these desperate people who maybe have been burned out of their homes, displaced Kenyans done in by other Kenyans who get into a land dispute. Some of them are suffering from war trauma. They come in from South Sudan. We have people from 11 nations, Djibouti, Ethiopia, South Sudan, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda. I'm sure you remember that name. Once in a while, somebody from Somalia. Most of them are Muslims. But I have a great job. I listen to the souls of people. I listen to their desires, their hopes, their pains, and I help them come to God in order to unburden themselves and to be renewed by the Spirit of the living God, as only God can do, so that they can go back and continue doing the terrific jobs they're doing, because this is nation building. This is what builds a nation. You have institutions that provide the academics, the medical care, and especially you pick up the unfortunate and you give them the chance of having a good life. And the other thing that I'm doing is I teach at a local seminary in Nairobi, and these are future Catholic priests, either from southern India or all kinds of nations in Africa. We even get them from West Africa, Nigeria, Cameroon, and then Zimbabwe, Zambia, Rwanda, and so forth. These are the kind of students I get, and I'll teach one class a week there, and it's usually on the experiential dimensions of the Christian journey, and we have great conversations.
You've just written and published More Than You Could Ever Imagine on Our Becoming Divine.
That's right.
What do you want us to take from this book?
Tremendous hope that the destiny every human being, not just Christians, but every human being, is to become godlike. And people would say, well, what do you mean by godlike? Well, the essence of God is persons pouring out themselves to one another in total mutuality. And some people might say, explain that. Well, the heart of the activity of the life of a soul, of a person, is to know and to love, to be known and to be loved. And that's what goes on in God, being known and knowing, being loved and loving. And as images of God, that same dynamic is going on in us. But so often we end up looking for love in all the wrong places, as the cowboy song says. We go looking for a fulfillment in something that doesn't give us that. But in the book, I'm talking about this awesome relationship with God that is offered to every one of us. And there are so many different ways of finding that God. But we do not become really ourselves until we have come into that relationship, and we give ourselves more and more until the day, like God, we give all that we are.
Speaking of a relationship with God, you write a blog periodically.
Yes.
And on Saturday, March 28th of this year, you said this: I've learned over the years that when I engage in my 45-minute meditation contemplation each morning, I move to be very quiet, to just focus on God, not to start thinking of anything about God, nor saying anything to God, nor imagining anything about God, but just to be quiet and attentive. So you spend 45 minutes a day just being.
Yes.
How do you do that?
How do I do it? I know him enough to where he is enough. And I know that if I don't touch base with him at the beginning of my day in that way, then the quality of my day is much less. I'm more scattered. I'm more subject to trying to pack too much into the day, excessive activity, and therefore I'm not centered any longer. So it grounds me. It centers me.
And does he ever talk to you during those 45 minutes?
Not with human words, but he certainly is. His very presence is a word of love. I can't prove it, but I know it is true. I've experienced it.
As our time winds down together this evening, mm-hmm. would you please lead us in a closing prayer?
Sure. Gracious One, the source of us all, we place ourselves before you as we are in our life as it is right now, the good and the not so good, the happy and the sad. And we ask that you receive us as we are and bless us with a new outpouring of your Spirit so that we can still have hope. We can have hope against hope. We can have courage to express the best of ourselves and to be the best of ourselves with the people that you put us with, and that may start with our own self, that we may reverence ourselves and in truth, care and reverence in our own self, so that we can be lights to the world, salt to the earth, your glory now and forever. Amen.
Father Bernie Owens, what a shining example of truly surrendering and trusting in God. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohem.
Believe in yourself.